I originally thought being an agent was like a deal maker. We do that, but if you have a good agent, they will sort of be your first line editor. They'll be your ally in your career as a writer. To some extent, they will be your concierge. Can I get you some opera tickets? But it's a pretty creative job for me. I'm very much involved in the creative process. And it's so fulfilling when we get a contract and I see that first book come out.
That's my guest today, literary agent Andy Ross. We're going to talk at length with Andy in just a moment. But first, let me welcome you to Inside Independent Publishing with IBPA. Thanks for streaming in. I'm an independent publisher and I'm your host, Peter Goodman. Inside Independent Publishing comes to you from IBPA, the Independent Book Publishers Association. IBPA's mission is to lead and serve the independent publishing community through advocacy, education, and tools for success. For more about IBPA and how it can help you be a better publisher and sell more books, whatever kind of publisher you are, go to ibpa-online.org. You can also tweet questions and comments to me at the handles at Peter Goodman or at IBPA. Now, let's get started. Andy Ross began his literary agency, the Andy Ross Agency, in Oakland, California, a little over 10 years ago. One of his recent agented titles generated a lot of media attention and sales, I assume, The Doomsday Machine by Daniel Ellsberg. But before agenting, Andy was owner of one of the best-known and best-loved bookstores in America, Cody's Books in Berkeley. Meaning that Andy was one of the nation's premier booksellers for 30 years. So like no one else, perhaps, Andy knows books and bookselling. And now, as an agent, he also knows the deepest and darkest secrets of both authors and publishers. Well, welcome, Andy Ross.
Hi, I'm glad to be here.
So I guess after 10 years, you're fully used to being an agent. And I see you've even written a book called The Literary Agent's Guide to Writing a Nonfiction Book Proposal. But the question is, do you miss bookselling?
No, I really don't. I feel very proud of what I did, but it was difficult in a lot of ways, and I ended up. Everyone thought I had kind of a glamorous job, but I seemed to be spending a lot of time dealing with things like bad plumbing. Plus, I had a lot of employees. I had a labor union, and that's always difficult to deal with. And now I get to work on my own with authors. It's really creative. It's a lot of fun.
Great.
I'm pretty happy.
Well, metaphorically speaking, I suppose agents and publishers also spend a lot of time working with bad plumbing.
It's better than I thought it would be. I love my author, with a few exceptions.
Sure. So just to clear things up, briefly speaking, what does an agent do? What do you do specifically?
Well, when I first got started, I thought I was going to be sort of like a real estate agent, just selling books instead of houses. But it hasn't been that way at all. I originally thought being an agent was like a deal maker. And we do that, but if you have a good agent, they will sort of be your first line editor. They'll be your ally in your career as a writer. To some extent, they will be your concierge. Can I get you some opera tickets? But it's a pretty creative job for me. I'm very much involved in the creative process, and it's so fulfilling when we get a contract and I see that first book come out.
Yeah, well, I imagine back in the day, and I don't know exactly when the day was, but maybe 30 or 40 years ago, maybe the agent's role was much more just simply as kind of a middleman or a broker. But as
well,
you say,
a lot of them still are. I've had, some of my clients have had really bad experiences with these sort of, very well-known, successful celebrity agents who I think are frequently successful because they're successful. They represented somebody big and then people go to them. But and some of them are very good, but a lot of them are busy and a lot of them are lazy. And people have come to me from some of these agents and they were not well served. So what I would recommend for a writer who who isn't a celebrity already is to go to some of the agents who have experience but maybe aren't so glitzy and aren't with these big agencies in New York. They don't always help.
Is that kind of a rule of thumb? Stay away from agents in New York? I know you don't want to make any enemies on this podcast.
I would like to say so, but I know some wonderful agents who just happen to live in New York.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how would someone actually tell the difference? I imagine everyone's got a website that extols their virtues.
We do, and we're also shameless name droppers so that you see these big name people on the front of our websites. Don't get intimidated by that. Anyone who's looking for new clients is looking for new clients. And it's sometimes hard to tell from the website if you're going to want to work with someone or not. I think the biggest problem, the one question which a lot of authors don't ask, mostly because they're scared of agents, is how far will you go to sell my book? And I know people who've had experience with some of these big agents that and it's like something like literary fiction, which is hard to sell for anyone. But they send it to the same 10 people and then they give up. Well, most of the people who are debut authors, they want to get their book published. They're not all that interested in a six-figure deal. And what you want is an agent who will really walk the walk for you, and so that by the time they do give up, you will know that everything has been done. They will have sent it out to 30 or 40 publishers, and when they return it, it probably just can't get published. That's the kind of agent you want.
You kind of touched on something I wanted to discuss. A lot of the people listening to this podcast are not. There is a combination of people who are authors, who are author publishers, and then who are very small independent publishers who don't have a lot of money to pay advances. They don't have a lot of marketing muscle. They may not have a foreign rights department or whatnot. Now, as an agent, you make money when the authors make money. And so if they
That's
get a big
right.
advance, you get a percentage of it. If they sell a sub-rights, you get a percentage of that, too. So you're in an ideal universe, you would sell books for the most that you can get to a publisher that's going to really sell the heck out of it.
Right.
So for the people who are listening, though, who really aren't in that category of maybe a publisher, you don't necessarily look at them as a last resort, do you? Do you sort of put them in the hopper
along
with everyone else?
Well, I prefer to get a publisher who can pay a lot of money and who can promote the book. But for a lot of genres, for any genre, it's gotten very hard to get published now from the major publishers. They're really risk averse. They're very celebrity driven and media driven. And most of the agents I know, or at least the ones I respect, they're committed to their author, and frequently the author just wants to get published. So more often now, we are trying to help them with smaller publishers and things like literary fiction, which is impossible to get published. It's okay to talk to people who have kind of smaller platforms. Publishers.
But I mean, and just how do you justify your time, though? I mean, authors would be very happy to deal with.
Well, at a certain point, you don't. You want to help. You're committed to your client. And if you just give up, if they can't get $30,000 advance, then you're not a very good agent.
Yeah. So I guess the takeaway then is that even an agent might, a good agent in any case, would be willing to pursue the book to its logical end. At what point, though?
They would, and I would encourage smaller publishers to contact me. A lot of the smaller publishers, they're sort of off my radar, but that doesn't mean that they can't do well promoting a book, particularly with literary fiction. I'd like to know that they're, I've seen some people that it's really no better than self-publishing. They just don't have that much to offer. But if they are pretty serious and they've had some books they've had good experiences with and they're enthusiastic, I'd like to hear from them.
Sure. So you'd be willing, in a sense, then, to defer earnings, understand that you're not going to get a big advance, but if you have confidence in the publisher and their ability to sell the book, then you'd be happy to work with them.
By that point, after I've kind of gone through my A list and my B list, I really am working for my client. I just want to help them get published, and there won't be a lot of money in it for me, unless there is, but my first obligation is to my author.
Great. So have you seen instances where indie authors, self-published authors, or very small houses have had such a success that they've kind of realized that they can't manage it anymore, and they approach someone like you, and you're able to take a book that was published elsewhere and turn it into a more commercial work?
That usually doesn't happen. I think when I first got into agenting about 10 years ago, publishers were talking about finding self-published books and publishing them, and that hasn't really worked out all that well. Unless, of course, the book is sold a lot, and their idea of a lot is different than the rest of our ideas of a lot. I mean, if a book is sold, you know, 20,000 copies, then they might be interested, assuming they don't think it's already, you know, exhausted the potential audience. But mostly not. And I get a lot of query letters from people who are mostly self-published, and they said they want the power and the clout of a big publisher to make their book a bestseller. And the truth is, for debut authors, publishers don't do all that much for you. They expect you to do all the work. It's kind of prestigious. It builds your platform, sort of. But they have kind of unreasonable expectations, I think. There are some advantages to being published by a publisher, a large or small publisher, rather than self-publishing. You can get into bookstores. You can get reviews. You can win awards, which you probably can't do as much if you're self-publishing.
That is changing, I believe. The term self-publishing, I think, is being replaced these days by the term author publishing, if for no other reason than to not have the term self-publishing, which has been degraded over the years. And for that matter, for author publishers, there are a lot of opportunities, like you know, publishing on, Amazon's CreateSpace is one. There's Ingram Lightning Source, which makes your book available as print on demand to booksellers, not only in North America, but around the world. There do seem to be a lot of opportunities. Do you feel that there's a bit of a divide growing between what you might say commercial publishing and maybe everybody else? I mean, excluding academic and professional publishers. Is there
I'm an author publisher. I didn't use that term, but I will from now on. I published my book.
Make sure you do, Andy.
I published my book, A Literary Agent's Guide to Writing a Nonfiction Book Proposal, and I did it using Ingram Spark. And it's available as an ebook on, you know, the usual places, Amazon and Apple. And then I had it printed. I have, you know, the printed version is done through Ingram. So it's worked out pretty well. But still, it's hard. It's hard to get into bookstores.
Right. They won't order it necessarily if they find out that it's print on demand. They're worried about returns, I think.
For them to order from Ingram, unlike CreateSpace, where... But it's, you know, just getting it out there is difficult. You have to spend a lot of time marketing a book. And you know, authors aren't that good marketers, usually.
Yeah. Well, just to plug IBPA a little bit, I think that's one of the things the organization intends to do is like, okay, you know, you've got a book, we're all writers, et cetera, but that's not publishing. Publishing is, you know, disseminating, getting it out there. And those are a lot of the things that authors learn to do that they might not necessarily learn at a writer's conference. I want to talk, you mentioned Amazon. How do you see Amazon's role in things? Are you on the Amazon is the devil, or are you in the role of Amazon is... Well, Amazon is God. We all know that, right? But
I'm on the continuum. I'm much closer to the Amazon is the devil side,
right?
Particularly because I was a bookstore for so long. Publishers, I mean, Amazon. It's become a situation where you have to have them. And in my author published book, probably 90% of my ebook sales are done through Amazon, and probably most of my print on paper sales as well. So you kind of need Amazon, but they are I don't know anyone in publishing who has ever had a good experience with them. Apparently, trying to negotiate with Amazon is just brutal. They are not respectful of publishing, and they have far too much power. I've had experiences where they've negotiated, you know, it's not a real small publisher, but an independent publisher, and the publisher wouldn't give them what they want, and they took the books off, they took buy buttons off the books.
Right, I heard about that.
Mm. Which meant you could still buy the used copies of the book, but neither the publisher or the author made any money from that. And increasingly, if a book is on the backlist, they're not using the publisher as the published book as the first source. They will use one of these third parties where, again, the author doesn't get a royalty. And this isn't doing anyone any favors except for Amazon.
Well, I think you'd have to say that the reason that Amazon is so strong is because they have such a loyal customer base, and they have the issue of convenience. And they're really masters at that one-click buying.
They are very good at it, for sure.
Yeah, they're very good at it. So how does
that... But I think, my concern is that they're just too powerful.
Sure.
And they are not looking out for... They're looking out for their interest. I mean, that's what people do, but it's not always the same as our interest.
So people are talking about possibly Walmart and Kobo coming together being some sort of competition for Amazon, and it's hard to imagine the the salvation of publishing coming from Walmart.
Yeah, no, but I don't have any. And the number two ebook venue is iTunes, and it just doesn't even come close.
No.
Amazon has so many barriers for competition that's serious that it's become impossible now. I mean, it's kind of a classic structure.
Well, I suppose there's not much we could talk about Amazon forever. I wanted to ask you one other question. As an agent, I was looking at your website, and you said agents have about 45 seconds they give themselves about 45 seconds to decide whether they want to pursue a project or not. What are five things, or roughly five things, that you see that immediately turns you off and says, I don't want to talk to this person, no use to me?
Well, 45 seconds is a little optimistic. Most agents I know get about 10 to 20 unsolicited queries in the slush pile a day, so there really isn't much time. What I do is I read the query letters, and sometimes I read the first paragraph of the query letters. What turns me off? I don't know. I mean, people with delusions of grandeur turn me off. They think we're all going to make $1 million. That's the kind of client I don't want to work with. When they say, there has never been another book like this before, my first question is, I wonder why that is. But what the things I look at for nonfiction, it's much easier to get a quick sense of whether there's a possibility in the concept. So the first thing I look at is if there's kind of a high concept, and then I look to see who the person is. I remember the decision I made the fastest before even finishing the letter. I called up the author, and it was simply because of the concept. It was a woman who had been a successful paparazzi, and I went, wow, that's got to be good. And I called her up, and of course, I could have looked at the book, and if it might have been bad, it turned out it wasn't. But I just immediately took that book on, and it got published.
Yeah.
I got a kind of a big option from Entertainment Network. And then the other one I called up immediately was a novel. Novels are very hard to figure out if they're worth taking on, because it's all about the writing. It's the concept's important, but it's about the writing, and most people aren't good writers, but you don't know that until you've invested a huge amount of time.
Right.
But anyway, the person I got the query letter from, she had won, she was Latina, and she'd won the International Latino Book Award twice. And I said, well, I at least want to find out more about this person. And I did, and she was a great writer, and we published her book, or we got it published.
Those are kind of thrilling moments, I think, and I experienced that too. When you come across something, it just seems so right, so thrilling. It's like, oh yeah, this is why I do this.
But it doesn't happen that much, and I you know, I go to writers' conferences, and frequently I don't get invited back because I'm so honest, I guess. And you know, I'll get 5,000 query letters a year, and I'll probably pick up maybe 10 or 15 to work on. And a lot of those won't get published. So those are kind of dismal batting averages.
Well, one last question. I was looking at the categories of stuff that you handle. Let me just read them off. Narrative nonfiction, science, journalism, history, current affairs, contemporary culture, religion, children's books, and commercial and literary fiction. That's a broad list, but of course there are other you don't do... you don't do poetry, for example, which is bound to disappoint all the poets.
Well, most agents don't do poetry for the simple reason is that most poetry is only published in poetry by poetry publishers, and they don't like working with agents. They're scared of us. They think we're all a bunch of, you know, monsters. Of course, maybe we are. The truth is I'm kind of I consider myself sort of a literary gigolo, and if I think something can sell, I'll take it on. I actually represent the best-selling baking book in America, and I am not looking at all for cookbooks. It just sort of happened.
Was this the bread book?
Yeah. It's on and off the best-selling baking book in America.
Make a lot of dough off of that one, are you?
Thank you.
Yes. Ba-doom. All right. So what kind of books are selling? I think that might give our listeners some sense of whether they're, you know, on a, you know, a good path for them or not.
Well, you know, if you're following the trends, you're going to, you know, whatever you're following, the train has already left the station. So I wouldn't do that. The only generalization I can make is that much more than when I got into the book business a long time ago, most of the books we sold at Cody's, for instance, they were all backlist books. And now book sales are very much driven by media, I think. But that's where small publishers come in, is that a successful book for a small publisher might sell, you know, 3,000 copies or less would be a really successful book. Whereas for Random House, they would consider a 20,000 book sale as a failure. I would say small presses can kind of go against the trends.
Right. Or they have their niche audiences that are scattered all over the place.
Audience.
Yeah, and they know how to reach them, more important.
Well, the publishers are really terrible. I mean, they don't like regional books, and they will like regional being like things like California,
right?
But they and their definition is basically everything in New York City is national and everything outside is regional, which probably accounts for why there's about 10 cookbooks for the trendiest Brooklyn restaurants. They really are shy of looking for books with niche audiences, even when it might be very robust. The example I use for people who want to self-publish is somebody writing a book about how to put on your school book fair. There's a lot of people looking for a book like that. There's a big audience, and it's kind of an easy audience to find online. It's an easy audience to market to. But it's the kind of thing that you don't really need a national publisher, and they probably wouldn't know how to market it anyway.
Well, if somebody did have a book on how to put on a school book fair, should they send it to you?
No, they should self-publish it.
All right. Okay, well, if you're listening out there, that's a tip, that your next self-published book, how to put on a school book fair. It's probably a great idea. So great. Well, we've been talking with Andy Ross today. Andy is a literary agent. He is at the Andy Ross Agency, which you can reach online at www.andyrossagency.com. I also recommend his wonderful book called The Literary Agent's Guide to Writing a Nonfiction Book Proposal. And Andy, that's you said that's available everywhere, right? In stores and online?
That's right.
So, and Andy also has a blog, which is called Ask the Agent, Night Thoughts on Writing and Book Publishing. And I wonder, what are your night thoughts on writing and book publishing? Idle thoughts?
I've just related them to you today.
All right. Well, very good. Thank you very much for talking with us, Andy Ross. And check him out at andyrossagency.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. After recording this interview, I spoke with Andy Ross a bit more. And he wanted me to emphasize that he's hoping some of the publishers listening to this podcast will get in touch with him. It's very possible he has good projects looking for a home. So just a reminder, contact Andy at andyrossagency.com. Now, one advantage of working with an agent like Andy and others like him is that when you work with an agent, you're basically already getting a manuscript and an author that has been subjected to a fair level of professional scrutiny. Can they write? Is the project commercially viable with a market? Is the author promotable? And in many cases, agents serve as developmental editors. They'll be approached with an idea from an author, but then to pitch it to publishers, the agent will work with that author on hammering out a good proposal, doing market research, and in many cases, doing a first or second pass developmental edit so that the project being pitched is 90% ready to go. Big publishers, in fact, these days, they depend on agents for a lot of the pre-publication work that goes into creating a marketable book. As Andy mentioned, not every agent is going to be so hands-on, but many of them are, because they have to be. And that can result in a beautiful friendship, if not a marriage with a lot of very successful children. Now, to comment on this podcast, tweet to me using the handle @PeterGoodman or @IBPA. And just a reminder, if you're already a member of IBPA, we appreciate your support. And be sure and let us hear from you. If you'd like to learn more about IBPA or are considering joining, check out the IBPA website at ibpa-online.org. Thanks again for listening to Inside Independent Publishing. Keep your nose in that book. And as my bosses in Japan used to say, let's have publishing fun.